Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Happy Tech Tuesday. Glad you could be with us today. Really excited about today's guest because to me, he's not a guest, but to you all, he will be. I'll be introducing a little bit later Ali Barnes, the founder and inventor of Pro Elite Training, which has sponsored pretty much all of our shows if you've been listening. And as we maneuver through our series here, you know, today is Tech Tuesday, and we like to talk about all things in the tech sector. If you want to join our conversation today and be a part of our dialogue, remember, you can call us at 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. Or if you're looking for treatment or if you have questions regarding your business or technology and how technology can assist you, please don't hesitate to call. We are on standby to assist your business. But from there, you know, recently we've had guests on talking about their technology. We had Jet Fuel Tech speaking about some of their wearable technology. We had AJ Smith with Chosen in as well, talking about his relationship enhancement tool and how technology can essentially get us closer to people that we care about and have us behave in ways that's more conducive for high-level relationships. I think what we've learned, if you've been listening, is that we can see technology in a host of ways that will affect our lives for the benefit or the positive, if you will. And we also talked about some of the negatives of technology as we had Iku Williams of CyberSure on talking about cybersecurity and how to protect yourself against cyber threats and bad actors out in the field. And so we have to maintain a healthy and balanced look at how we're engaging in technology and essentially what is our personal behavior toward technology. One thing that I've seen over time, and I think this has been a phenomenon more recently, and when I say recently, I'm talking the last 10 years or so, is that a lot of people have embraced technology and have made decisions that they would start tech companies. And being a founder has become now a buzzword, and people want to be CEOs. They want to be founders. You hear terms about investing or seed rounds, and all of these things were not conversations that existed in, you know, the 70s, 80s, or 90s, and even the early 2000s, if you will. But lately, it really has become a point of focus as, you know, the more social media expands, the more people are seeking to create tech companies. We also have a scenario where our lives have been affected to where now it's our new normals. And when we talk about our new normals, you know, technology governs a lot of our life. When you think about how you go about your grocery shopping or how you go about your travel, or even yesterday when we spoke with Jason Buckley from Titan Armor as to how we think about digital currency and cryptocurrency, is that all of these things have been made based on technology. So therefore, our understanding, our awareness, our openness and reception to technology becomes vitally important. And so today's show is no different. I've had the pleasure of building a company, and I'm calling it a pleasure because there's been some heartaches and pains, which we're going to talk about, but there's also been so much that we've learned and so much that we've accomplished by building out our athletic tech company. And so without further ado, I want to bring in Ali Barnes, founder of Pro Elite Training. Ali, how you doing today, man?
Hey, Doc, how you doing today? Happy to be here.
Fantastic, doing well. And so what many of the listeners may or may not know is that, you know, you and I both own Pro Elite Training, and it is a concept that you invented. And I have not told the audience much about the story of Pro Elite, but I think it's a really interesting one. If you don't mind, kind of walk the listeners through how you came across creating this technology and a little bit, or explain a little bit of what the technology is.
Okay, so one day when I was training one of my younger clients at LA Fitness, I realized that he had trouble with his rhythm and also his ball control and hand speed. So what I did was I started to clap my hands to give him a visual cue and also an audio cue. And once I was able to do that, we finished the entire workout with me clapping my hands. And I realized that I could clap my hands fast, I could clap my hands slow, I could clap my hands with a rhythm, without a rhythm. And with using those audio and visual cues, he was now able to train those drills perfectly. So basically, I went home after that. I looked into hip-hop handles. Not hip-hop handles. I looked into training with music. That's all I looked up, is just training with music. And then I stumbled upon hip-hop handles, right? Didn't find anything around the word hip-hop handles, nothing remotely close to it. So after I realized that, I went ahead, found a beat on the radio that had a consistent click, you know, just like your hand clapping, right? I dribble to the beat, record myself, and then at that moment, I go train some more athletes, right? So I set up my computer, I play the video, and the next thing you know, the kids are dribbling on beat while they're following the video, and it was the funnest training session that I had, the funnest training session that the players had. And from there on, I knew I had a multi-million dollar idea that can revolutionize the training world. Because what it does is it perfects your muscle memory, just like if you were learning your ABCs or your president's names. It perfects your muscle memory because you're constantly on beat to the same rhythm, to the same music, over and over and over and over again. And scientifically, we learn better that way. So...
Well, I remember when you came to me and you were talking about training, you know, mainly basketball players at that time. Right. When it was, you know, hey, I can help this guy with his dribble combination based off this rhythm. And you brought the concept to me. And I remember how new and how fresh the concept was and how we went to explore, does this exist? Do others train in this way? And commonsensically, we knew that people train to music because that's kind of peanut butter and jelly. That those kind of go together. Anytime you see someone working out, they're working out with headsets on, or they've been, I guess now you've got your earbuds in or your earpods. But in this case, we knew that that's always been a reality. But what we were uncertain of, which you started to investigate, was how many people have actually used the metronome inside of the music to actually train their muscle memory. And okay. That part was something that we thought was maybe there's something here, and can we harness that in a technology? So we went from saying, all right, is it basketball or is it more sports? And that's when we really got excited because we said, it's not just basketball. We can extrapolate the same concept and then press it against all other sporting types. Therefore, we can actually be responsible for increasing the rhythm and tempo and pace of people through something as normal and as simple as music. So with that, you know, what I remembered is you starting to go, and, I mean, you really went haywire, for lack of terms. You went really crazy with how many people can I train this way. Talk to the audience a little bit about what was it like before you had the technology, but as you were starting to research just anecdotally, could this even become a thing? I mean, you started to group train people. Talk to us a little bit about that.
So when I first stumbled upon the idea, I really focused on group training, right? And at this time, I was pretty limited with this new concept because I didn't know how to create the beats and use the metronome. So therefore, I was pretty limited with the music I could use, the drills that I could tie to the music. So outside of group trainings, I didn't get to the point where we could train anyone and everybody, including experts all the way down to youth, until we learned that the metronome is exactly what we're targeting. And that metronome can be at 60 all the way up to 200. So once I figured that out, I was able to go onto YouTube and find a bunch of metronome combinations and beats. And from there, I was able to create, you know, close to 1,000 different drills.
Well, see, we talk about, you know, the metronome for the listeners out there. There's a click, and that click inside of it is governing the speed or the pace. So when Ali is saying 60 or 80, we're talking about, that's the quantification of how fast that beat is going. So no differently if you were in a car and you were going 25 miles an hour as opposed to 60 miles an hour, that's telling you how fast you're going. Well, your beats per minute, your BPMs, is what the metronome is measuring, how fast you're going. And we were able to discern that, you know what, this person's really good at a 60, but not as good at an 80. Or I can do the whole group at 100 and everyone can keep up. And then I can manipulate how well they do or don't do. But I tell you what's unique about where we are, and this is the part that really affects everyone out in the audience as a business owner, is that we had that go, Ali, from you having a concept and being something that you could do with the individuals that you were training, and then turning it into a business that would eventually be something that people could engage in, interact with, and ultimately something that you can earn revenue from. How tough was a process was that from the beginning? What were some of the things that you learned? And I'll share with the audience some of the things that I not only learned, but we also had to help you navigate against. But let's talk about in those early years, what were some of the things that you saw that you wasn't aware of?
So right away, I feel like one of our biggest hurdles was the music licensing, right? Music was the biggest hurdle because obviously we need the music to train the athletes. And at that time, we weren't creating the beats for the music because I didn't understand the nature of the metronome yet. But besides the music licensing and that gigantic cost that would have costed us if we went that route with the commercialized music, the other part would have been the development. The development for what we originally thought we were going to take the app to was in the millions of dollars. So if I had to wrap those two things together, without startup capital, it's really hard to get much done when you have those high.
I don't know. You say without startup capital, but you came to the table right out the gate with $30,000. And I know I just put your information out into the airwaves, but you didn't even get started before it was, let's go ahead and let's build the prototype and let's see if this thing could even become something. And you remember how big of a price tag that was.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Because, I believed in the concept, the product, the business from day one. I mean, when I saw what music did for this kid who could not dribble a ball a second ago, and then as soon as I clapped my hands, now he's a four-star athlete. I mean, it gave me goosebumps. And, yeah, you are correct, Dr. Baker. I did come to the table with that initial investment to get the prototype developed. But I will say after that, music and the app development were the biggest hurdles. But as far as the concept itself, you know, that was probably the easiest part.
Well, I think in this instance for other people, that coming up with $30,000 from the beginning would be the hardest part. Right, because you have to look and you would say, hey, I don't know if I have an extra $30,000 to put to something, which, oh, by the way, we knew that $30,000 wasn't going to generate you revenue. That 30 grand was just to provide more information just so we could even understand how to build the technology. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, sir.
Right, because the technology had so many intricate parts that's what we were learning as we were going through. You know, as you mentioned, talking about the music licensing, and you'll remember this, but me and one of our other business partners, Corey Blunt, we drove to New York City to go meet with Slaughterhouse, which is an affiliate of Eminem's record label, Shady Records, and we went and met with their business manager, and we drove right back the next morning after having a two-hour meeting with them just to understand all the licensing rights. And some people would say, well, why would you have driven to go see them? Well, when you're working with entities large as they are, and this is pre-pandemic time, so everyone wasn't thinking Zoom at that moment. We were still thinking face-to-face meetings. So right. We had to get there before they went out of the country because they had a two-month tour that they were embarking on, and we would not have been able to speak to them face-to-face for 2 months. So we took the opportunity and just jumped in the car and went. And so we learned everything that we needed to know about licensing, whether you're talking about the masters, the mixing of it, who would be a part of it, who owns the production rights. We went and got all of that information that day, but there's a cost to that. You also remember that we flew to Miami for opportunities with the technology. We flew all the way out to Los Angeles for the fundraising scope and the strategic partnership realities of the technology. And we also drove to Chicago working with a large tech company to see what their partnership would do with us developing out the technology. If you are actually paying attention to the listeners out there, that's literally all four areas of the country. And that is substantial work. And you look at that and you say, not only is Ali Barnes out to 30,000, well, here I am now joining the ownership team, and we're transporting ourselves all around this country just to find partnerships. And this is even before we would ever even build out the technology to launch it to then turn around and generate revenue. And I think it's some of these realities when you think about technology that some people, or really a lot of people, don't understand when it comes to I want to be a startup founder, in which you saw a lot of that firsthand. Am I right?
Yes, sir.
Right. So in this case, and you talked about the development, and I want to transition a little bit. When we were looking at the music itself and then putting that together and then working on the development, what were, you know, if you could articulate to the audience, you said the development was difficult. Let's just give them a snapshot of how difficult development was. And when we talk about development, it comes in two ways. One form of development is business development, and the other part of development is technical development. So right now I'm speaking toward technical development. Let's go through some of the obstacles of that, even if it's from the prototype to the actual designing of it, to the wireframing, to the build outs. Talk to us a little bit about that type of the process.
So originally we were going with a full native app, and that native app was going to cost us, you know, upwards to $800,000, $1 million. And that app, that native app, was going to have all the bells and whistles, commercialized music integration, everything you can imagine. But once we realized that, you know, $800,000, $1 million, that's a tough investment to go secure, we were able to find the correct partnerships that attempted to get us on a progressive web app, right, which is a lot cheaper. Now, the first partner we had did a pretty decent job, obviously, but we weren't confident enough to take it to market. So therefore, we circled the wagons, found another partner. Now, this partner was able to produce us, you know, a pretty productive web app, right? The only thing was, some of the videos weren't really working all the time. This was wrong, that was wrong, this was wrong, right? So, and I'm telling you all of this because it's all about having the right people around you. It's like building a championship roster. Like, you may be able to get to the Eastern Conference Finals every single time, but until you make that trade, you're not going to get over that last hump. And we've dealt with about, I think, three different development partners. And this last guy did a fantastic job, was able to remodel the progressive web app that our second partner did, and basically took it across the finish line. So with saying all of that, I would say the hardest thing is just picking the right partners, because at the end of the day, it's hard to determine what the end result is going to be when somebody is providing you a service like development.
Well, you know, you talk about some things that just brought back, you know, chilling memories for me as we were navigating through this together, is just how difficult it is to invent new technology. You know, something as simple as just a video seemed easy, but the video is actually complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, if you're a listener out there and you think, I want to deploy a new technology, I want to be a tech founder, well, what you run into is that if you're inventing something, the word, the definition of the concept itself means that the thing doesn't exist. So you're going to run into realities of the unknowns because it doesn't exist. And you believe that, oh, it's simple, we could just do this. I always tell people, the moment someone says, well, all you got to do is, well, that's not true, because it's never just all you have to do is. It turns into, what about this, and trial and error. Let's do a quality assurance test. And as we started to navigate through the build-out, every time we went to go in, it was, man, you know, we have a glitch here. It's not enough bandwidth there. If we were to deploy here, would the system crash? We want to make sure that we can't be hacked into it. We have to also make sure that our IP is protected. Remember going through all of those stages. And that wasn't a quick scenario. I mean, it took us years, am I right, Ali, to just get through, how can we make the videos work in a way that can't be encrypted?
Yes, that and the whole patent process definitely took up a majority of time in the beginning stages.
Well, to other people, they might think, where's the product? And you're saying, well, we could give you the product at some level, but the company will be at risk. And so if any of the listeners or the regular listeners remember us talking about having a risk assessment, we brought in Riskversity, and Riskversity walked you through how to analyze risk in your business. Well, we had to do the same thing with ProElitis. What is our risk if our technology isn't sound? What is the exposure to the company? And when we say exposure, we're not so much talking liability from liable, meaning lawsuit. We're saying, what about our intellectual property as a whole? Can it be extracted and taken? Can we protect it overall? Can someone bypass what it was that we created and then do something else to circumvent our system and manipulate the system? And so all of that technology has to be built, unless you do what you talked about beforehand, is give us $1 million and we can easily put these components together. But if you just don't have a spare $1 million just kind of laying around in the living room, then you have to figure out how to piece this together in very smart ways while going through different fundraising rounds. Let's look at a little bit of that. You know, talk to the audience a little bit about the difficulty of the fundraising process and some of the things that you might have learned through that process.
Well, one thing is for sure. Until you receive the money, you have not secured the investment. And I've experienced this with my trucking company thus far. We have guys that will reach out to us looking to invest in the company. And then when the date is set and the contract is sent over to be signed, they go radio silent. So I'd say that's one main thing that was getting in the way early on, is securing funds, and then the funds never came in just because the investor simply changed their mind, got cold feet, whatever the situation may be. The other problem I would say we ran into a little bit is the fact that some people just aren't impatient. I mean, some people aren't patient, right? You take an investment and you're waiting 2 years, 3 years, and now you're getting a little antsy. So outside of those things, the personal communication with the investors, and then actually securing those funds and getting people to the room, I say you did a hell of a job, Dr. Baker, as far as securing all the money we received.
Well, I appreciate that, but you know, we go back to some of the original promises we had, is that you had scenarios where we were promised X amount of dollars, you know, at different realities in which they never manifested, in which you could have gone through 3 or 4 or 5 yeses and really got to the point of deposit and something else happens. Well, a lot of your plans, what you have in your pro forma, how you're looking to execute, all of that stems on how were you going about securing that part of your business. And when that part falters, now you're scrambling and adjusting. Now, I think we had a decent process as it relates to, if this doesn't happen, then we do this. And if this doesn't happen, then we do that. But all of that still increases your time frame.
Yeah.
So as this time frame is going, you lose 60 days or you lose 90 days. Well, that's 90 more days or 120 more days. You haven't received any payment off of this thing that you've built, but you're still shelling out dollars.
Right.
And so that makes that very difficult. And I think you hit, you know, the nail on the head when you talked about patience. It's not so much just patience on the investor side. You also have to have patience on the founder side. Because you have a scenario where you want the thing to go more than maybe the investor does. Or you want the thing to go more than anyone else that's partnered with you. But the reality is it can only go when it goes. And then even inside of that doesn't mean that you're done. We're going to continue to focus on some of the pre-launch stuff. And we're going to talk some about the post-launch stuff after the break. But as we were navigating through, what are some of the fun aspects of launching a tech company and being a tech founder?
Man, so sitting in those meetings, all the pitch deck meetings, learning from you, Marcus, and Ben, being able to rub shoulders with other big time execs that, you know, wouldn't have their doors opened if it really wasn't for you. Learning how to put together pitch decks, learning how to really sell your product and get investors' money, which I have been able to successfully copy and paste with the trucking company, thanks to you. But I say that was the most exciting part, being in those big executive rooms, you know, with the decision makers, really, not somebody that's just a liaison, but like the real owners of the company and decision makers. I think that was the most exciting part, and really just showed me the way to do big business and how big business is done, you know, B2B. So I think that was the most exciting part for me, was learning from you.
I appreciate that more than you know. And just so you know, audience, you guys heard that in real time. I heard it for the first time in real time in 6 years of working with them. So I'm completely humbled even by that statement. For me, the funnest parts, or the most fun, is really when looking at the content itself. You know, we had great meetings and great opportunities with the NFL Hall of Fame, and then to watch your concept become a reality at the NFL Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, and to see those athletes do the drills and to have command of the room and to have command of all the parents through the technology that we built was remarkable to me. And to go through and say, we had something that he envisioned. Now they're actually utilizing the technology and it's being used the way in which we all believe that it would have been. When we went to Nashville, or actually it was Knoxville, to go be with Tony Johnson Jr., who's our bare knuckle champion, our MMA fighter. Well, to go down there, you know, in the UFC gym and to tape him and watch him go through our workout. And at the end of that workout, for him to acknowledge it was one of the hardest workouts he had ever done, because the sheer science of it took him into a place and a mental capacity that he just simply had not done before. Even though it looked as if it was something that he could have easily mastered, once he got into it, he kept going at a high level because he knew the difficulty of it. And I would say lastly is in Columbus, Ohio, when we had our Dallas Maverick, Trey Burke, come along. His was actually the funniest to me because he thought it was going to be very easy. For him to be sweating up a storm and was like, this is an actual workout. He had to tighten his shoes up. And remember, he had just flown into town to do his camp, and he thought he was going to do a couple quick dribbles, only for him to say, oh, my goodness, this is really difficult. And I actually tell a lie. I thought that was the last one, but another one that was really fun is when we had Kevin Soule, a.k.a. Cup, do our prototype, and he could not keep handle of the ball on the metronome, and he was a globetrotter. If there's any listeners out there, globetrotters have fantastic handles. They can dribble a basketball in any way, and he couldn't dribble it to the metronome of the music because the science was as simple but so complex that his muscle memory was not ready for it. And we stayed in that gym, 3 to 4 hours with him trying to master it even after we cut the cameras off. It's that type of work that I thought was fantastic, just seeing the evolution of the technology itself.
Absolutely.
We'll pause right there for a station identification. Today's segment is brought to you by Bazemore Beard Oil. It's a part of the Bazemore product family line. That's Bazemore, Bazemore Beard Oil. If you want a bigger, fuller, better smelling, better looking beard, you'd want to go to BazemoreProducts.com and order you one of our three fragrances, which is Flight, Nova, or Waves. Bazemore Beard Oil is the best product that any man can use for their face in the event that they want to have a stronger, fully, better-looking, better-smelling beard. That's Bazemore Beard Oil, to be found on BazemoreProducts.com. So we fast forward now, Ali Barnes, and we've gotten past a lot of the difficulty of actually building out a tech company and having a tech product that now people can now enjoy and engage in. Talk a little bit about some of the struggles behind that portion, even past the launch, or better yet, let's start with getting to launch and then slowly after the launch, just to give the listeners an idea of just how business is universally difficult, no matter what industry that you're in.
Yeah. So when it comes to creating the videos, there's multiple components that I'm responsible for. So the music is one thing, right? But before I find that beat, that beat that makes sense for Pro Elite, I probably listened to about 2 hours worth of music before I decide to pick one song. And then I take that one song and then I add a layer of metronome beats to it, whether it be at 120, 140, 160, and then I add the rhythm after that. So once you have the music, now it's about creating the drill. And now one beat can provide over 100 drills across 5-6 different sports, right? So now you have that one beat that you created. Now it's time to create all the different drills and workouts that this beat can be utilized in. So once you have that, you put it together on iMovie. I add the watermarks. I add the logos. I add the time clock. So by the time all of that is put together, one video can take up to around 2 hours, really. If I'm able to move a little bit faster, I can get it down to about an hour and a half, an hour. So I say all that to say this. I never expected the amount of time and effort it was going to take to make these videos. And I think that's the point I'm trying to make in business is you never can truly know how much time is going to be required of you to get the job done. You just have to get the job done and adjust and go about your business.
Well, you know, that misinterpretation or misappropriation of money, time, or what you think people will do. You know, you've got a reality where I think people are inherently trusting, even though we like to think that we aren't. Because you hear people say all the time, don't trust anyone. But the reality is you kind of do. And so when someone says they're going to do something, you believe that's going to happen. And so if you take them for their word and then it doesn't happen as quickly as it should, well, that slows you down. Then you think about a task and you say, okay, well, and I'll give you a great example. How many times have you thought, hey, I just got to run to the grocery store really quick? And you're like, yeah, I'll be back in 10 or 15 minutes. And it takes you 45 minutes because you underestimate the light. You underestimate additional traffic. You underestimate the line at the store. So nothing ever happens in the time frame that you actually think that it will.
Exactly.
And so in business, it's identical to that, where it's all we got to do is upload these videos into the cradle. The cradle will position it and harness it so that it can't be pirated. And you say, okay, well, all we have to do now is do the edits. Great. Well, now you find out that each video is an hour and a half, and there's 1,244 videos. And you're like, whoa, how much time is that times an hour and a half? So then you say, well, no, we can't launch that many videos because it'll be 7 years from now before we can get it out. Mm-hmm. And you're like, right, okay, so until we either pay, you know, to have the process expedited, well, what does it cost to expedite that? Well, now your cost just increased by 10x. And you're like, mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. Now, I don't know if I want to spend 10X on that. How about we reduce that and then we do it? But if we do it, now I've just increased my time again by 3 or 4 or 5X.
Right.
So you're always squeezing the balloon on one side, pushing it out on the other. And I think one thing I would say for me that was probably the most frustrating out of this entire process outside of working through human capital issues is literally sitting saying, all we're waiting for are the videos.
Yep.
Not that it was your fault, not that it was my fault, not that it was the development team's fault. It was just that we just have to sit here and watch paint dry. That's what we have to sit and wait for. Because not only are you waiting for that to be done, now you have to determine the quality assurance of it. And if any of them have bugs or problems, then you have to go back and either redo them or find a way to edit and revise.
Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation for sure. Going back and making sure all the videos were correct and edited properly. Yeah, I didn't even equate that time into what I just spoke about. But, yeah, that's probably one of the biggest things when you're dealing with, you know, you're spending 8 hours a day and you might have made 30 different videos. Like, it gets repetitive. So, therefore, it's easy to make mistakes when you're constantly doing the same thing over and over. You can miss something here, miss something there. So, you are right about that. The quality assurance is another major part for sure, and not just with the videos but with the app too. All the quality assurances and the bugs that we would find and have to get refixed, that definitely takes away from your time.
One thing that I tell our patients, and we work to tell this to the listeners, but for certain excuse me, to our patients, is that when you're looking to create a tech company, you cannot forget that it's still a company. And so he said, what do you mean by that, Doc? Is that so many individuals say, well, I want to have an app or I want to have a brand. And they use those words independently as if they're not companies. Companies have to have layers and all those layers have to mesh together. It's no different than, and I'm going to use a sport analogy just because I believe it's appropriate. But some people would say, well, I want to have a team. But if you want to have a team, you got to have a front office. And you have to have a community relations department. And you have to have a compliance division. And you have to have a medical staff. And you have to have insurances. And you have to have a stadium. And you have to have food service. By the time you start naming these things, it's no longer even about the actual players on the field. It's about everything else.
Right.
The players are the last thing you're dealing with, even though it's the reality of what it is you're looking to accomplish. Your concept, which you fell in love with, became the thing that we stopped talking about for years. It was everything else. It was legal. It was fundraising. It was compliance. It was, you know, technicals. We talked about those realities for literally 4 to 5 years. We didn't talk about, man, we're going to do a crossover dribble combo. That wasn't even in the equation anymore.
Right.
And that's the reminder to the business owner that you have to see your business holistically with a full and complete picture and say, am I programmed well enough for every aspect of the business? Because any one of those aspects can bury you. Speaking of which, we've always had a very strong legal team. Wouldn't you agree with that, Ali Barnes?
Yes, absolutely. Fantastic legal team.
But didn't we run into legal problems multiple times?
We sure did.
Yeah, we've had 3 legal issues that had nothing to do with us specifically that took about 8 to 10 months to assure that we would be fine in order just to launch the company. Now, if we didn't have if our legal wasn't healthy, there would be no Pro Elite. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. There would be definitely no Pro Elite without that patent.
Right. Well, whether we're talking, the patent is one level, that's the intellectual property, but we had legal concerns over our own videos that we shot ourselves.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. I do remember.
And we had to put our videos on freeze. We had another lot of music that we couldn't use out of Tennessee with a particular group because their music got frozen. And they were in a lawsuit in Florida, which was the music we had planned to use. So we had to freeze that music, which opened you up to learn how to make beats yourself. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Right. So that's just the legal concerns. So if you're out there and you're listening and you're saying, well, heck, I want to create a tech company, I'm not telling you these things to discourage you. What I'm saying is this show is called Doctor's Orders. So the purpose of the existence of the show and my work is to make sure that your operation is healthy. So to make it healthy is for me to let you know the things that are unhealthy, to let you know what symptoms are, so therefore you can be aware of these symptoms and say, wait a minute, I heard Dr. Baker speaking about that. Where are we legally? Where are we commercially? Do we have the rights to this? Did we do a search for that? And if you don't know how to do those things appropriately, then number one, you can call us and we will help you. But if you don't call us, you better promise me, silently that is, that you will go ahead and you'll find an expert that can help you navigate through some of those realities. Well, Ali, now that we've launched and we're on the other side of the launch, the product is real. Anyone can have it. And by the way, if you're listening, you can download it right now and pretty much everywhere, whether you're in your app store or your Play Store, whether you go to the web and you go to getproelite.com, is that it is now a very real thing. You can download it. It's a freemium model. Talk to me a little bit, Ali, or at least talk to them a little bit about what is the experience now that we're on the other side of development. The MVP, which stands for Minimal Viable Product, is available for people to engage in. Talk to me about this stage. Right now, let's go with some of the pros versus the cons, but some of the pros where you are on this stage.
Well, the pro right away is we're not dealing with quality assurance anymore with the development department. So that's a pro. Another pro is people can download it and play with it. We can get feedback from them, reviews online. We can market it, push it. It's already being pushed on social media. That's another pro. And then lastly, the projection of it. When you see all of these virtual training companies out here in the market and you see that the power that digital assets are going to have as far as like podcasts, the radio shows moving forward, I think that's the most exciting part, because this Pro Elite has so many potential partnerships out there with all of these different companies that offer virtual training. Off the top of my head, I cannot come up with them, but I'm sure you already have a few back-end exits in mind that I'm referring to.
Well, you know, for me, it's all those things that you mentioned, but now we're actually doing the thing that we set out to do so many years ago. And it's okay, well, how well can we push it? Where's the feedback? And then can we solidify these larger partnerships that can saturate the market in the way in which we believe beforehand? What I find to be very telling and hopefully for all the listeners, is that your work is never done when you own a business. You think that it is, but it isn't. There is no coasting period. So in there, you're always looking to invent and reinvent. You are doing something and then taking score. Jason Buckley from Titan Armored spoke about that yesterday, where you're always taking score of the work. So whether you're out hunting to get a client or you're maintaining a client, you're taking score of what that relationship looks like. Oh, in this instance, on the tech side of it, you're doing the exact same thing. One of the differences is that we don't necessarily know all of our audience personally. So because of that, we're using push communications to where people hopefully see it and say, okay, let me download it based on what I've seen, while still navigating the back end and saying, how much pull communication can we do, meaning that we control the dialogue that comes in. So just as an example, that what I personally do every day for the company is that I'm meeting with large companies to figure out who wants to partner with us. So just to give you an example, the original investors and builders of TikTok are individuals we speak with. They are overseas, and they're a decent overseas partner with us. The reason why I say decent is because we haven't solidified all of our work yet, but they've engaged us for nearly 2 years. They've helped us build out our models, and they're working with us to grow the business. We've got other domestic partners that have been keeping an eye on our progress, and they want to see exactly how well the market embraces the product. Those things are exciting, but they're also a little nerve-wracking and create anxiety as well, because you want the business to go. However, it's still predicated on what you execute. And you're always looking to execute all the different levels in between there. Talk to the people, Ali, if you don't mind, about, you know, where your expectations were from the beginning and how it's been tempered since you've been able to really jump into this as a legitimate business owner and see kind of the real take of what business has to offer.
You talk about the beginning from when I first consulted you?
Correct. So where your expectations were from the moment you thought you had something to now being a person that's a seasoned tech business owner, if you will, based on the amount of years and work that you've had to do, how has those expectations been tempered at all?
Well, they've definitely been tempered for my benefit, but they've definitely been tempered. When I first came up with Pro Elite, like with anybody with a great idea that is a real new invention that no one else has discovered, you think you're going to get rich overnight. You think that you could find somebody with a lot of money and they'll go, you have a great idea. It hasn't been created yet. Here goes $1 million, right? So when we first started, it was the concept. And the concept is so ingenious that it's easy to explain to an investor, but it's also brilliant to where, you know, an investor or, you know, somebody with a lot of money can basically say, hey, you do got something here, I'll take it off your hands. And that's the angle I was working when I first came up with the concept, because why hold on to this for myself when I can just pitch it to someone wealthy and in position to really take this and take this project and concept and really take it to the masses, like a TikTok or a Snapchat or Instagram, like a real new sports training social media platform. But I realized that you need proof of concept. Like, no matter what business you're in, even before you do business with other people, you should try to gain a proof of their concept or a proof of their services that you're actually going to get what you're paying for. So they told us 15,000 subscribers, 50,000 subscribers, 3-4 months, come back and holler at us. So that continued to happen for about the first year or two. But once we decided to pivot, and I remember this conversation, we were in Dr. Baker's office, and he told me, look, man, if we're going to go the route of developing the app, fundraising, it's no longer a 2-year, 3-year time frame. We're going to be on this grind for another 3-4 years. And to be honest, I looked at that opportunity to go back to school, and now I'm graduating with my master's to show you how much time has really passed. But I say that's where I started, and this is where I am now. I'm very patient. I understand how long business takes, especially when you're moving so many moving parts around. But the fact that we have a product that's out there in the market now, I'm not even in a rush no more. Like I'm actually the most patient I've ever been. And I think that's because a lot of why I was anxious was because I was just nervous, right? Because we didn't have anything yet. But now that it's an actual product and it's out here for the masses to use, I've never been more patient in my life.
Well, I think, you know, with us traveling around the world, working with different large entities and some of the secrets that have come out, which these are secrets that I pass along to my patients in order to make them healthier in their operations. But it was a surprise to me to learn legitimately that TikTok took 7 years to get to market. And I knew exactly how much money was infused in there. And I knew exactly how they got their first 1 million subscribers, which was a strategy that we're not prepared to do because we're not backed at the same level that they're backed in. Hence the reason why it's such a global phenomenon now. However, 7 years to get to market. You know, if you were to say, I got the greatest idea in the world, but you, no one will really know about it for 7 years, that will hit you with a form of discouragement. But if I told you by year 8 or year 9, everyone in the world will use your platform and you'll have an IPO where you're now a publicly traded company, well, guess what? You might take that bet now.
Right.
And so in that instance, I am reminding all the listeners that even with an app or a concept company, it's still a company in that you have to build it for the long term with the appropriate legs on it. Now, I know some people are saying, what about timing? Don't you have to get in and get out while the market is hot or the market is primed for whatever it is that you're offering? And there are some instances where some things need to be launched, get what you can, and then you get out. But other businesses have to be built appropriately, hit the market legitimately, and there has to be a strategy for long-term scale and growth. I know on our side, we launched our MVP. Our MVP is below our tier one, which is a rung beneath the five tiers that we have. We already have it to where augmented reality, virtual technology based on all things, you know, Meta, now that it exists, streamed workouts, all of that is in our game planning to build and infuse inside of Pro Elite, which will make our product, you know, viable for the foreseeable future. However, you know, when you're thinking and you're nervous or you're anxious, and I'm not saying you, Ali, but just as a business owner is nervous or anxious about their product, what you have to remind yourself is, am I making something to just fit now, or am I truly disrupting an industry, or do I have something that has legs on it? I'll give another example of that, is that if you were creating a restaurant, and I use a lot of restaurant examples, some restaurants are so different, so unique that they now create a new way of thinking. So for an example, Chipotle. Chipotle became this fast casual where the food is already prepped, but it's still relatively good for you, and I can get in and get out in moments. Well, that's where you have other chains like Qdoba, BD Bob, Curito. Those chains all operate the same way. Pyology,
right.
Well, that's now disruptive in a way where it should be here for the long term. But even if you had a pizza restaurant, that pizza restaurant could be around for the long term, just as long as you're either housed in the right place with the right market. You don't even have to be special. You just have to exist and offer a product in a location with the convenience that your audience wants. So how do I transition that dialogue over to tech companies? Is that if your technology is relevant, in which Pro Elite is. That was one thing that we discussed way back when, Ali, when you started off first as my patient, and then we bought into the business, was you have taken something that people have used forever, which was working out in music,
right.
And you infused it in a way that now is natural for conducive training, meaning that you can get better at it, whether you're a novice or whether you're an actual Hall of Famer,
right.
Is that you can use this. We can speed you up and slow you down to enhance your skill level. That is something that has what I would call stick-to-itiveness, which means that the market should identify it. The only thing different is how does the technology morph with the rest of the world? And so we're very familiar with that. Whether we're talking tokens or crypto, our technology can move with whatever the current trend is, keeping it relevant. Talk a little bit about, you know, because you've mentioned some of it throughout our conversation today, but when you looked at growing Pro Elite and some of the things that you took from there, you've got a trucking business now, what I want you to do is draw the parallels. You drew the parallel as it relates to fundraising and investment, but pull out some more parallels because I want the audience to see that if the foundation and the structure of their business is sound, they can maneuver that in any industry. Pull out some more parallels from Pro Elite to your trucking business.
Okay, so when it comes to the trucking business, as far as you're talking about, like having your infrastructure there for you to
correct,
expand, right?
Right, because you weren't a business owner before we embarked in Pro Elite. I mean, you were technically through AB training, but that was because you were training individuals. Pro Elite and your trucking company are two different entities that involve other people with higher levels of functioning as a company. So we know commercialization is one of them, right?
Absolutely.
Right, how you go about commercializing Pro Elite and how you went about commercializing the trucking company, which, by the way, what's the name of the trucking company?
B&B International Logistics.
So B&B International Logistics had to be commercialized. B&B International Logistics had to also have legalities to it. Like, so extrapolate some of those parallels so that the listeners can say, well, heck, it doesn't matter where I go, I still kind of need some of this core stuff.
Got it. So before you even buy the truck, you got to get your legal, you got to get your paperwork, you got to get your infrastructure in place. I want to say, I've already, before I bought my first truck, we were starting to establish business credit right away. That way that if, you know, the storms come around the corner, you know, you can weather the storm as far as, you know, unforeseen expenses. So as far as the Pro Elite, we didn't get into just, you know, all right, we're going to put all this money into the app. We spent most of the time starting off with legal. It was patent work. It was creating the team together. It was getting the money for investors. And then we circled kind of back around and started focusing on the app. Because as Dr. Baker has been saying, the last year has been pretty much just waiting on the videos, right? We've always had the progressive web apps kind of, you know, partially done here, partially done there, partially done here. But we never focused on that first, right? So I think that's one of the parallels that you can get with the trucking company is that you don't need to buy the truck first. No, you need to start your LLC, follow with the state, then get your EIN, then get your DUNS number, then set up your bank account. Then you want to file with the FMCSA. Then you want to get your BOC3, then your UCR. So it's a bunch of small components, just like in a tech industry or within any industry, that you have to take care of first before you focus on the actual thing that you wanted from the beginning, which in trucking is a truck. And then with Toy Elite is the actual app. But if you don't, you know, do things in the correct order, you're going to waste a lot of time going in circles.
Well, I think that order is one of the realities that I'm always hitting home, is that these are metrics of health. And if any of these metrics of health are out of order, the thing that you're looking to launch or the thing you're looking to grow is going to crater. It's not going to work, or at least work to the potential that you want it to, because you'll be missing many components. The one thing that we can say on the Pro Elite side, regardless of how many subscribers or downloads that we have or don't have, the company itself is sound. And so there's not much that can be done against the company. The only concern we have now is are there 10 million people in our platform or are there 100,000 people in our platform? That's the only concern at this point. But when it comes to, is the company strong enough? Well, it's healthy all the way across the grid. In those instances, as you listeners out there, you want to double check to say, if I'm a tech founder and I've got an idea, I've got a concept, then I've got to have the ability to articulate the health metrics of my business. When you're talking technology, money is always synonymous with technology. They just go hand in hand. It's kind of like, and this may be a bad example, but I think the you audience, you'll get it, is that if you want to, you know, get rid of cancer, well, that's kind of money is involved in that. You need dollars for research. And so they go hand in hand. So in this instance, if you're thinking about, you know what, I own a company and I want to engage technology, or I want to be a tech founder. Now you have to think about, number one, what is the overall cost analysis of that? Then number two, what's the business model behind it? we decided, and we made this decision based on some of our overseas partners, that we would have a freemium model. And there's a host of reasons as to why we would have a freemium model. But number one is for that proof of concept that you mentioned, Ali, which gives us the feedback of the product itself. Well, the freemium model also allows larger players to understand who they will attract with this product. So let's say, for an example, we just got wind that we may be very close to finishing up a deal with a very large entity that every listener here knows. We just got that word this morning, and we've got to iron out a few things. But in this instance, when I'm able to talk about it, I will. But in this instance, in the event that this large household conglomerate says, we want to partner with Pro Elite, well, that's going to change the success level of Pro Elite. But in this instance, we had to be a strong enough business in order for them to even entertain the opportunity of that partnership with minimized risk. And so right. You need to understand what that looks like, and that's what we spent a lot of time working on. If you had to go back here, you know, Ali, kind of walk any new founder, anyone, give them any type of an advice. If you can go back to your younger you or someone else that's thinking about starting a tech company, you know, really quickly, what type of advice would you offer them?
So I get a lot of people who come to me with great ideas. And the first thing I tell them is make it tangible, right? Like, put it on paper. And if you can't put it on paper, make it a digital copy or literally try to build it. I remember I came to Dr. Baker one time with an idea. I'm not going to give you too much details on it, but it was kind of similar to Top Golf, right, before another sport. And I brought him an actual build-up of what I created so that he could visually see what I was actually talking about, right? So that's one thing I definitely tell people is, make it tangible. If you got an app or something and you can't record a video of what your app will be doing, make it tangible as far as the screens, what you want your screens to look, and put those on paper. Because whoever you go speak to, it can't just be words coming out of your head. Like, something has to be tangible. You got to be able to tie those words to something tangible. So that would be the first thing I suggest to people. Because before I met with you, I made sure that we weren't just going to have a conversation. I wanted to show you exactly what the product was going to be, you know. So that's what I can suggest is that make it tangible, and then if you can make it tangible, try to go out and get a proof of concept before you really speak to somebody like Dr. Baker, right? I know that we had our conversation a little sooner, but as soon as you saw that video, you reached out to Corey Blunt, who played with Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, to get the proof of concept, basically, and his verification that, oh, you guys really got something. So with those two steps, I think people can really put themselves in great position. Make it tangible, and then get your proof of concept if possible from somebody of value. Corey Blunt was a man of value. He wasn't a father, brother, or, you know, I mean, not, I don't mean it like that, but he wasn't your father or brother or my brother or father. So there was no like, yeah, you got something here. Like, it was genuine and it was real because of his profession correlating to that product, you know, him being a former professional basketball player, and then us bringing him this Pro Elite training prototype that has me dribbling the music, right? So if you got something for doctors or something, find a proof of concept from a doctor, right? If you've invented something for airplane pilots, we'll go talk to an airplane pilot for your proof of concept. But
well, Ali, thank you so much for that tip. I think people can hold on to that. Everyone, that is our show. We'll see you tomorrow on Worldwide Wednesday. I wish your business the best health.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.